I'd like to talk briefly in this talk about the fruits of meditation. And I think the best way to summarize it is in this passage from the letter to the Galatians, in which St. Paul begins by describing sort of the unenlightened way of life, or the disharmonious way of life, the meaningless way of life. And then he goes on to the fruits. Anyone can see the kind of behavior that belongs to the lower nature: fornication, impurity, idolatry and sorcery, quarrels, a contentious temper, envy, fits of rage, selfish ambitions, dissensions, party intrigues and jealousies, drinking bouts, orgies and the like. But the harvest of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, fidelity, gentleness, and self-control. There is no law dealing with such things as these. Those are the fruits of the Spirit. Now, I think if I were to, it might sound as if one gives a talk on meditation and encouraging people to meditate, and I would certainly like to encourage you to meditate. And then you give another talk on the fruits of the Spirit, which is what you'll get out of it. What's the self-interest? What's in it for me? And that's human enough. We're not going to undertake a discipline of a daily practice of meditation unless there are going to be some fruits. But I think I'd like to just put in a word of warning at the beginning, and that is that the fruits of meditation are such are the kind of fruits that make you less self-interested, less selfish, and less keen on doing something just for what you get out of it. Let me put it this way. I'm not talking about you selling all you have and giving it to the poor, or doing anything dramatic and extreme with your life. But put it like this. Imagine somebody who isn't married, has no family, no responsibilities. When they want to go out in the evening, they look through the paper and they see the film or the theatre show that they really want to go and see, and they'll only want to go and see something that is going to entertain them. Imagine the parent of a young child or children who wants to take the children out. And so in order to take the children out and give the children a good evening, they will probably go to something, to see a film, The Lion King, or to go and see a show that they would certainly never go to on their own. But they will find a delight, a pleasure and a satisfaction in taking their child to that performance, and their pleasure will be essentially tied up with the pleasure of the child. But their joy and their satisfaction will be linked to the pleasure and satisfaction of their child. So the fruits of meditation, you can't really isolate in terms of egotistical self-satisfaction and an egotistical kind of self-fulfillment. In Buddhism, certainly in Tibetan Buddhism, the many practitioners, many meditators or people setting out on a spiritual path, will take what's known as a bodhisattva vow, which means a bodhisattva is an enlightened being who decides not to take the final step into nirvana, into heaven, but to stay in this world for the good of others, and remains in this world out of compassion for the world until the whole world is released from suffering and bondage and enlightened. And so many practitioners are encouraged to take what they call a bodhisattva vow, which means that they take a vow, or promise, an internal resolution, to do their practice, their spiritual practice, for the good of the world, for the good of others. Not just for my enlightenment, my salvation, my happiness, my well-being, but for the good of the world. And it seems to me that that is deeply in harmony with the whole Christian idea of spiritual growth as well. If you look at the New Testament, you don't see a kind of consumer spirituality, which is, you know, do this, obey these rules, obey these regulations, and you will get everything you want. What you find in the New Testament, and of course this is at the heart of all true spirituality, you find the commandment of love. And love is that act of the human person which fulfills us as individuals because it fulfills us as people in relationship with others. And if you really want to understand the fruits of meditation, then the best way you can do that, I think, is to understand it in terms of our relationships with others. One of the great insights that the Dalai Lama shared with us during the seminar in London I mentioned to you earlier this year, last year, was his idea of the good heart. He believes that all religions, and he believes that every religion has its own specific mission in the world and its own purpose, its own uniqueness, but he believes that all religions nevertheless share something profoundly in common. And what they share in common is the idea of the good heart, that every religion has as its goal the development within the human person of their innate goodness, their essential good nature. And this expresses itself in terms of compassion, kindness, forgiveness, gentleness, concern for others, the spirit of service. That is the good heart. And we recognize goodness of that kind in a human being, regardless of their faith or their lack of faith. We recognize it in Mother Teresa. We would recognize it in the Dalai Lama himself. This is the essential meaning of human life, the development of this good heart, which is always directed in love and in selflessness outwards towards others, and is particularly expressed in compassion and forgiveness. And as the Dalai Lama himself teaches and practices, in the spirit of non-violence. So I think if we want to look at the fruits of meditation, let's look at it primarily in that light, and I think we're on the right path. Fruits is a very good word to describe what happens when you meditate, because it's something that grows naturally in us and through us. A fruit is something that emerges as the result of a process. You plant a seed in the ground, the seed germinates, begins to grow step by step through stages. Eventually you get the flower and then the fruit and the seed, and the cycle is repeated. So the fruits of meditation are a natural part of the process of spiritual growth. That's something that is particularly important, I think, for Christians to remember, because for many of us, when we think of virtue or being good, we think of it in terms of an act of the will. We've got to will ourselves. You know, all these things that St. Paul is talking about, fornication, idolatry, quarrels, envy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, and so on, all these things, we think that we've got to overcome these by a tremendous act of our own individual will. And time and again, we discover that we don't have a very strong will. We're going to give up acting in this way. We're going to break this habit. We're going to give up smoking. We're going to give up shouting at our children, we're going to give up sexual wrongdoing, we're going to give up all these things, and we do for a while and then they start again. So we discover very quickly that willpower by itself isn't going to bring about much of a spiritual enlightenment. Of course, we need a certain degree of willpower, but it isn't willpower alone that is going to achieve this. So it's important, I think, to focus on the naturalness of the growth in our spiritual development. And if you look at the parables, the stories that Jesus gives to describe the kingdom of God, which is this experience of the true self, then you notice how many of those parables of the kingdom of God are parables of nature, natural growth, seeds planted in the ground, growing by their own natural processes. So I think the first thing to understand about the fruits of meditation is that the seeds of these fruits are already within us. They're already part of our essential nature. This is what we are actually like. We are actually quite nice people. We are actually good people. And to develop and realize those seeds of goodness, the good heart, is the purpose of meditation, and it comes about through a combination, we would say as Christians, a combination between our own faith, the act of faith we make, for example, by sitting down to meditate in the morning and in the evening, the act of faith we meditate by saying the mantra faithfully from the beginning to the end and humbly. That's the faith in meditation, fidelity, sticking with it, doing it, on the one hand, and on the other hand, grace. Grace is that mysterious presence of the energy of love, the energy of God in our lives, which is never very far away, which we can forget, which we can ignore, but which is always there at work deep within us. Between faith and grace, this growth takes place.